While you're listening, go to arcpodnet.com/members and support our efforts. Let's get to the show.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And what we do is we identify, evaluate, manage, and conserve rock art both in Alta California and in Baja California. We conduct field trips, we have trainings, exercise, we do research, and in every way possible, we try to preserve, protect, and coordinate treasures of Alta and Baja California rock art, of which there are many and diverse. We also work closely with Native Americans and partner with them to recognize and protect sacred sites. So for more info about the fabulous California Rock Art Foundation, you can go to carockart.org. Also, I'm open to give me a call, 805-312-2261. We would welcome sponsorship or underwriting, helping us to defray the costs of our podcasts, and also membership in California Rock Art Foundation. And of course, donations, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit scientific and educational corporation. God bless everyone out there in podcast land.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hey, out there in archaeology podcast land, this is Dr. Alan Garfinkel introducing the 88th Rock Art Extravaganza. We're going to have Matt Zubia, who's involved with the Petroglyph Festival. He's the chair of the Petroglyph Education Foundation and has been responsible for bringing in the Native American involvement, the talent, the musicians, and a festival that is unique and extraordinary. I think you'll like it. He's a brilliant man, and I've learned a lot. Well, hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, with the California Rock Art Foundation, and we're honored and blessed to have a guest scholar, Matthew Zubia, who is the principal of the particular nonprofit foundation for petroglyphs out of the Ridgecrest area. And we're going to be talking to him about just what that's all about, how he got involved with the study of rock art and all things related to Native culture. And in turn, a bit about the history and evolution of the only petroglyph festival that exists, I think, on this earth out of Ridgecrest, California. Matt, are you with us today?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
I think we had quite an interesting dialogue last time we were on the phone. And the way I usually open this up is to let you sort of introduce yourself and talk a bit about your background and how you got involved with this rather esoteric subject.
I got involved with the Ridgecrest Petroglyph Festival in 2014 from its inception. And historically, my expertise is in music. I'm a musician, and that's what was my draw to the festival and helping out with it, because they needed some performers and some entertainment for the stage. That evolved over the years, and I became more involved in the educational aspect of the Petroglyph Festival. I became the chairman of the Petroglyph Education Foundation, where we do outreach with the local schools.
And that's a nonprofit, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And the purpose of the educational Petroglyph Foundation is?
To do outreach with the schools in the local area. And yeah, we work with the Mataranga Museum. And also a big component of it for me, and as part of our mission, is outreach to the local Native American tribes.
Absolutely. That's
And to encourage their involvement in the Ridgecrest Petroglyph Festival.
Yes. And of course, Matt, you and I are sort of linked in that sphere, because I've been advising and attempting to position the festival appropriately vis-a-vis a complement of local Native people and those that would be considered, I guess, reasonable and prudent and in alignment with the major mission and geography and emphasis for the festival, if that makes any sense.
It does.
So maybe give me a bit of history as to why and how this all evolved and how, where we've been and where we're at and where we're headed with respect to the festival itself. Maybe that's where we'll get started.
Sure. Well, the idea for the festival is, it was kind of twofold at the time when it started. And one, it was to, I don't know if showcase is the right word, but the petroglyphs that we have here in the area, and to bring a new kind of festival to Ridgecrest that involved the Native American tribes in the area. There's been some bumps along the way, and we haven't always been aligned with the Native American tribes, and sometimes lost the spirit and intent of what we set out to do. But over the course of the last 3 years, it's been my mission and my goal to ensure that, with all due respect to the Native Americans, that, that this is an all-inclusive festival, and to ensure what we're putting on is indeed in line with the spirit and intent of what we set out to do. My intent was to have all the performers on the stage for 2021 to be Native American. And that's the first year that we achieved that.
Yeah, an emphasis or showcase the Native people, I would think, of the region, correct? And then, also even a broader sort of concentration or backdrop to demonstrate and communicate and educate the general public on who the Native people are, what they represent, how they view the world, and that they're still here. They're not in the past. This is a lively and contemporary and vital expression, and we'd like to be able to share that. Now, I know that this has evolved again, and I know that there's been a, you know, it's been a challenging thing to demonstrate to Native people, I think locally, the viability and the longevity and the function or purpose of the festival. Am I correct or no?
Yeah, you are correct. It has been, as you said, challenging over the years, because at the beginning of the festival in 2014, we had several Native Americans who were with us and helping to put this on. But in the end, there's always seems to be some concern outside of planning the festival from other entities, be it Native American tribes or others, that aren't really in line with what we're trying to do. And it's my goal to make sure that we are aligned with as many tribes and local areas as we can be aligned with. That's why the Petroglyph Education Foundation is important, to continue the outreach with those tribes.
Definitely. Now, so that everyone understands, Ridgecrest is in the area called Eastern California, the corner of the Western Mojave or the Southwestern Great Basin, just east of the Sierras. And there's actually quite a number of different ethnic groups, indigenous, Native American groups that exist in that area. In the far Southern Sierras, in the mountains around Lake Isabella and up into the uplands, there's a group called the Tobotalabo. That means pinyon pine nut eaters. Then to the south, they have a group called the Kawayasu, and those are their Southern Paiute speakers. And then we've got the Timbisha or the Panamint Shoshone in Death Valley. And then just to the north, we've got the Owens Valley Paiute. And a little bit further north, we've got the Mono Lake Paiute or Kuzetika Paiute. So potentially, actually, the rock art itself and the region is sort of a magnet for quite a number of different ethnic groups. Is that correct?
It is correct. Yeah, you named all of the tribes in the area that would have contributed to the area in terms of the petroglyphs that we have out here. So you named a couple of tribes there that I know for sure now, because I've booked them, that we have scheduled to perform and be involved in our festival coming up in November.
Now, when you say perform, are they speaking? Are they going to be doing music? What particular activities are they part of at the festival?
So there are going to be some cultural exchange presentations where they provide high quality presentations for the event. The tribe I'm referring to now are the Big Paiute / Taos Pueblo. They'll be doing some exchange presentations for us. We do have a Mono Lake Paiute who'll be doing a basket weaving demonstration as well.
Excellent. Excellent. I know that at one point we had the Tobotalabo that were there, the South Fork Kern River Indians. And I know even another time we had the folks from Panamint Valley and Death Valley, who are the Timbisha or Panamint Shoshone. They're also at times called the Koso. So I know I've seen them.
Yeah, I have reached out directly to the Timbuktu Shoshone, and I'm trying to book them to come out and participate in the festival. That's currently TBD on getting them out here.
Sure.
You mentioned the Tabatalabo, and I was first introduced to Tabatalabo last year, and it was pretty exciting because they agreed to come down at the last minute and perform for us. And I developed a quick bond with the gentleman who came down, Daryl Garcia, and was looking forward to having him bring his art down here again this year. But unfortunately, I won't be able to have him down here this year. I am working, however, with the Tabatalabo tribe, and I do have some phone calls with them later today to talk about their possibility of coming down here and being part of the festival.
Great. I know that Samantha Red Riding Horse is very active in trying to demonstrate, communicate, and educate others regarding the nature and character of their tribe and the language. I know the Kauai Sioux, in fact, have a very vibrant language and cultural expression, teaching the language, etc. And I know the Panamint Shoshone, or the Timbuktu, the Koso people there, are sometimes represented actually in Bishop. There are some Koso there, and then others are living in Death Valley. So it's rather interesting. It's a mosaic. The other thing that's interesting, and I didn't really understand this until relatively recently, I was out at Little Lake, and Little Lake is part of the broader Koso range. It's a privately owned duck club that has about, let's say, 7,000 individual instances of rock art, both petroglyphs, rock drawings, and rock paintings. And when one studies those images, some of them appear to have affiliation to what's called the grapevine style. And that's a particular style that was represented most enthusiastically or prolifically with the Mojave Indians. They're also called, some of them are called the Kitsan. They're agriculturalists. They live on the Colorado River. And one of the things they did was they were runners and traders and travelers. So they ran across east-west from the Colorado River all the way to the Chumash country. And one of the places they stopped was Little Lake. And so there's images there that are probably representational to them stopping at this particular spot. Also, the Mojave would identify geographic places in their own language. So they had a trail that they followed. And one of those places that they did have was in the Cosos at Little Lake, which is where they stopped. And I believe they had a name for that spot as well, which is, I think, another sort of, you know, interesting facet of the connection between Native American groups throughout the Far West. Interesting, isn't it?
It is. That's very interesting. And it, you know, it kind of all comes together as I do my outreach to the various tribes in the area. And I'm learning constantly about how the relationships developed in the past and where we are today with our relationship with the local tribes.
Well, I think that'll do it for the first segment. Why don't we segue to the next one, and we'll dig a little deeper into some of the nuances of all this. See you in the flip-flop, gang.
Keep this conversation going by joining our members-only Slack team. There's always vibrant conversations going on over there between members and hosts about the topics we're podcasting about and more. Also get access to our back catalog of bonus material and ad-free shows. You get all this for $7.99 a month or less than $80 US per year if you get the annual subscription. Support archaeological education and outreach by supporting the APN. Go to arcpodnet.com/members for details. That's arcpodnet.com/members.
Are you listening to this podcast and thinking you'd like to start your own podcast and don't know where to start? Well, Chris Webster, that's me. I'm founder of the APN, and I started podcasting back in 2011. You can learn from my years of experience, and you can do it at your own pace. Head over to propodcastnow.com and click the Learn to Podcast image. My 6 to 8 hour self-guided course will take you from show inception to your first episode, and you'll learn the tools you need to keep it all going and prevent pod fading. That's a real term. You can have access to the materials for as long as you want, and if you stay in for 3 months at least, you'll have lifetime access to the graduates Slack team so you can talk to other people that have taken the course and are managing their own podcasts. Again, head over to propodcastnow.com and click Learn to Podcast.
Welcome back. This is segment two of the 88th Brockhart podcast from the Archaeology Podcast Network. And we have Matt Zubia on board, and he is the director of the Educational Foundation with the festival out of Ridgecrest. Matt, why don't we probe a little deeper, drill down, and talk about your association with the music elements, the entertainment elements that were available at the last festival.
At the last festival, as previously stated, we had an all Native American talent at the stage. Prior to that, we hosted a couple of different acts that were Native American, and then the rest of the acts were either local bands that played some type of folk music or rock music, but it wasn't in keeping with the spirit and intent of the festival. And that was done to fill the stage because we had such a hard time finding Native American talent. Now, I know that there's plenty of Native American groups out there that perform and play music. We hadn't lined up the right connections to find them.
What were those right connections? Please share that with us, because I know how difficult I found it to identify and cultivate the proper associations.
Well, credit to you, Dr. Allen. You put us in contact with the Ram Dancers from Supai, Arizona, the Havasupai people, and they were an absolute hit.
It took us 2 years to find them and get them.
Yeah, so you set the groundwork for that, and that was a huge find for the festival, and they were a hit while they were here for the several years we had them. So that was one of the connections that we had through you. And then also working with our promoter, Ramon, had helped us land some connections as well with this group called DDAT. And that name used to stand for Defi Delbert Anderson Trio. So they're a group out of New Mexico, and they play a type of funky, poetic, type music with a stand-up bass and a trumpet. And then they have a front man who doesn't sing, but he raps. And so it's not rap in the true sense of the word, where you're thinking, as rap comes across, but it's a rap, and it's all based on their experiences. They were a hit. They've been the main act for us for a couple of years. And this is a group that's been featured on NPR, Yahoo, SiriusXM, et cetera, and TED Talks.
Wow.
So they're a renowned group, and they've been able to come out here the times we've had them and perform for us.
Well, that's certainly a coup. I heard them and I really liked them, in fact. And I was surprised to find a fully Native American group that was involved in this rather eclectic music. It was quite surprising and wonderful.
That's correct.
So who else did you get?
Well, 2 years ago, well, before the pandemic in 2019, we had a young lady who I met who's Navajo. And she was able to, she told me she could sing the national anthem in Navajo. So I brought her up to the stage, I put her on the spot, and she sang it. And I decided, well, you know what? I haven't been to a festival yet where we have started the festival with the national anthem. So I said, in 2021, we're going to do that. And this young lady is going to sing the national anthem for us in Navajo.
Oh, wow.
And that was a great hit.
Oh, my word. That makes my heart sing. That's brilliant. I love it. When we did the field trips, when we were allowed to do field trips into Little Petroglyph Canyon, one of the highlights was when I had brought in a Native American with me who sang a prayer in her indigenous language before we traveled into the canyon. And it brought a number of people to tears. And it was, you could hear a pin drop. It was so remarkable to listen to this woman sing in her native language and about her feelings and her, thoughts and prayers before we entered the canyon. Just remarkable.
Yeah, that's what that does to people. I looked around. First of all, it was the first time that we presented the national anthem at the festival. We opened it with that. And to present it in the Navajo language by a Navajo, I think was the height of my time with the festival, because this is where we've always wanted to be. But as I looked around during the national anthem that she was singing, people were just, they stopped in their tracks. People were walking by, and it was a national anthem. So rightfully they were standing, but if they were walking by, they stopped to, very interested in what she was singing.
To venerate and pay homage to both the national anthem and an indigenous person singing it in their language is so remarkable as to, you know, really be a very special experience.
So other acts we've had at the festival, he's a veteran with us. He's been with us for a lot of years, Terry Goodell. He world-renowned hoop dancer, and he's been a dedicated performer of ours for several years. And just a quick tidbit about that, because we're still in our infant stages as festivals go, we're still learning as we go, you know, things logistically, and where do we put the stage to get the most people to the stage. And in years past, we had the stage in a position where trying to draw people to go see Terry do the hoop dance, it was disappointing because we weren't getting the crowd that we needed. So we decided the stage placement was very important, and we put it in a spot this year where people had to walk by it. And let me tell you, Terry was ecstatic with the audience participation he had this past year, because it was the most he's ever had in all the shows he's done for us over the course of the time he's been coming. And so you see, we're still learning where to put things as we go through this planning.
Yeah, that's really special. And that gives sort of an insight into sort of the internal planning and the dynamics of trying to put on a festival and to try to get the right people to see and experience what you're trying to accomplish, isn't it?
It is. It is. And credit to all the people that I'm surrounded with that have the same goal that I do, is to put on the best festival we can, making sure that we are you know, doing with the most utmost respect to the people who we are honoring.
When I talked to your executive director, she had told me that there's some new ideas that they're actually going to have some sort of a larger function, an Indian powwow of sorts there. And that will kind of change everything, won't it, a little bit?
It will. And you touched on another one of my missions and goals as I, you know, learn my way through this festival planning and going out and doing the outreach that I like to do. And that is, I set out to find somebody of Native American descent that could help or organize a powwow. And so I went on a mission to find somebody, and thankfully I was able to find somebody who agreed to organize a powwow. And so we've worked close with this gentleman, giving him a lot of freedom to put on the powwow, how he knows how to put it on. A very little interaction from the Petroglyph Festival Committee, because we don't know how to put on a powwow. We leave that to our Native American friends to do.
So what is a powwow per se?
So a powwow is it's a celebration of dance and songs. If you've been to a powwow, you can, you know, see a powwow on the internet or TV, what a powwow looks like. You've got a head drum, and it kind of revolves around the head drum, because the head drum is a drum that sits on the ground or on a stand that the powwow attendees or the powwow participants will gather around and play the drum and sing the songs, while the arena director invites dancers into the arena, and then eventually audience participation. So it's a traditional celebration for the Native American tribes.
And which tribes specifically are going to be participating? Do you know?
I do. Yes. Currently we have, so our organizer is Apache. We'll have Paiute. We'll have Ojibwe. And there's a couple more that have not gotten word yet, but primarily right now there's three that I know of. And the organizer is supposed to get back to me on the other tribes that are going to be participating in the powwow specifically.
Will there also be vendors that are associated with this powwow, particular Native groups that are selling perhaps jewelry or other elements of their culture?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So we have always had Native American vendors at the festival participating. And because we're having a powwow this year, the way that a powwow works is that if you're at a powwow that's not associated with a festival, mm-hmm. then you have Native American vendors at the powwow. So in this case, instead of having our Native American vendors spread out amongst all our other vendors on the street, right. they will be associated directly with the powwow. So the powwow will be exclusive Native American yeah. vendors.
Well, that'll be exciting, I think, because you can have almost a pure essence of Native American associations there together, couldn't you?
That is correct, yes.
Well, what's interesting, to lend a sort of a different scholarly background or academic research background to all this and Native Americans is I have co-authored a book coming out here in the next, 6 months to a year. And it's an academic treatise talking about what we call Uto Aztecans and their symbolism, specifically going from Coso, talking about also the Hopi in the Southwest, the Huichol in South Texas, and then moving into Mexico or Mesoamerica and talking about those of the Aztec, you know, the Nahuatl people. So in any event, there appears to be a thread, genetic thread, linguistic thread, a connection running from Coso in the Great Basin across to the American Southwest into the, you know, South Texas and into Mexico. And that's linguistically, but also iconographically when it comes to certain key symbols. And this particular new book is a bit of a revolutionary take. It's really the first time it's really been developed that we can recognize this connection. So I think that's of interest, and it sort of parallels your work in terms of bringing together a diverse array of Native Americans. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. Well, I think that at least covers the second segment. And in the third one, I think we'll talk about some very specific efforts with the festival and talk about some of the up-and-coming things. See you in the flip-flop, gang.
What do you use for appointment and task scheduling? I used to constantly move things around in my calendar that were just tasks I needed to do in favor of meetings. Now I let an intelligent AI do that with Motion. In Motion, all I have to do is create tasks with a soft or hard deadline, state how long I think it will take, and whether it can be broken up, and Motion does the rest. It puts the task where it's a best fit for me getting it done by the deadline. The scheduler then puts appointments with people wherever they schedule and moves the tasks around them. Support the APN with a little kickback if you sign up and try Motion for free at www.arcpodnet.com/motion. That's arcpodnet.com/motion.
Did you know we have lots of great shows on the Archaeology Podcast Network? Head over to arcpodnet.com and you can see all the shows that are currently producing podcasts. Scroll down a bit more and you'll see some great shows from the past that still have great content. Search for your favorite shows on your podcasting app or listen right on the page at arcpodnet.com.
Hey, out there in rock art podcast land or petroglyphs and pictographs such as it is, this is Dr. Alan Garfinkel bringing you segment three. This is the final segment of our third element. We are blessed and featuring a gentleman by the name of Matthew Zubia, who is the director of the Petroglyph Foundation and associated with the Petroglyph Festival in Ridgecrest. So Matt, I think in this final segment, we had talked about kind of drilling down and talking about really the heart and soul and purpose of the festival, which pays homage and venerates and recognizes the importance of Native people, their heritage, and their particular cultural values. Why don't we try to kick off some sort of discussion on that subject?
Well, I think you hit it the nail on the head, Alan, when you said that it's an homage to the Native American tribes, because that's something that only us who are involved with this type of event and these types of traditions really understand the importance and the value that it adds to what we're doing. I had a gentleman as part of the Big Pine Paiute Taos Pueblo tribe. When I reached out to him, they hadn't come down here before. And when I reached out to him and asked him if he'd be interested, he was very thankful for including them and bringing this back to them. And that made me excited. And also, it made me feel warm inside that we're doing the right thing. At least we're starting to do the right thing. So it's important to Native Americans that if we're going to do this, then we're going to do it right.
And in that regard, what is it to do it right, and what is it to do it wrong? What are the particular elements or postures or perspectives that one might have that are considered in alignment with perhaps native philosophies?
Well, the first thing that is important is the outreach that we do to get to as many local tribes as possible to kind of enlighten them on what our goal is and have them steer us in the direction that is probably a lot more coming from us who are organizing it, us non-Native Americans that are organizing it, to take us in the right direction. I want them to come with us on this path. I don't want to do it without them. And so it's important for us to recognize that. You know, early on in the festival days, we got some pretty bad feedback in that it was just another street fair in Ridgecrest. Yes, there were petroglyph tours, but it just looked like another street fair.
Right.
And that's something you learn along the way. And it's been my goal to not make this a street fair and make it what it was set out to be.
So the core competency and the distinctiveness of the Ridgecrest Petroglyph Festival is that it celebrates and recognizes and pays homage to Native American heritage and culture. And I think that's a rather special expression. And I think that the ancient images that adorn immediate landforms in the area are quite special. And also, there's probably one of the only examples of what they call Petroglyph Park. Would you like to mention that or no?
Absolutely, yes. So we do have a park in Ridgecrest that is called Petroglyph Park, where there are replicas that line the park in various areas of petroglyphs. And each year at the festival, we offer
walking tours.
Walking tours, yes, with Dr. Allen and Olaf Dowd, who was responsible
for making them.
for making those. Yeah. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for, responsible.
And this isn't just, you know, little tiny boulders. We're talking about tons and tons and tons of stone that were hauled in and erected and engineered and replicate images from all over the world, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. Credit to Olaf. And he will be providing tours again this year. And we look forward to, you know, keeping him around as long as he'll be with us.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. I was shocked to learn, you know, what they had to do to put this together. And it wasn't easy. And he did all the imagery in the entire park. One man.
Can you believe that?
He did all this. Yeah, that's unbelievable. And once you see this, you'll get a kick out of it. It's rather important and rather wonderful. And the images are often life-size, meaning they're equivalent to the originals. And they're huge. We're talking about these immense rocks, which are standing up and representing or replicating the images to be found both in the immediate vicinity, but also throughout the world. So anyways, there's that one. What have we forgotten? We've got the vendors, we got the powwow, we got the walking tour. I guess there will also be vendors that are selling artwork and books. And then, of course, the Matarengo Museum will be open, as well as the new and improved and brand new Welcome Center to California there in Ridgecrest, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And last year was actually the grand opening for the Visitor Center, Welcome Center.
What's a Welcome Center?
The California Welcome Center provides area information for people coming through the town as tourists. So up and down the Eastern Sierra, over as far as Death Valley, offering a lot of information on the area.
Right. It's got maps. It's got resources. It's got people who are steeped in the, you know, the access and the other attractions and how to get there and what you can do. But besides that, there's kind of a bit of info or infotainment actually in the center itself, isn't there?
There is, yeah. There is a virtual reality station where you can take a virtual tour of Death Valley. And I just learned today that they also have and will be offering during the festival virtual tours of the petroglyphs.
Yes. And that's put together by a world-class expert in virtual reality. he works all over the world and uses this technology to capture three-dimensionally the wonder of certain historic resources. His name is Eric Hansen. I've had the pleasure of working with him. He's one of our board members for the California Rock Art Foundation. And remarkable, just remarkable what he's done. He was in China and did some of that work. He was in the Arctic Circle. He was in Egypt on the Nile. He gets around. And he also did quite a bit of work in Mexico on the peninsula of Baja, doing some of his VR virtual reality work for the largest prehistoric paintings in the world in the Sierra de San Francisco. And so I think some of that work is available on your VR headsets there at the Welcome Center, isn't it?
I believe it is, yep. I haven't personally experienced VR at that location, but it's something that they do offer, and I think it'll be a hit as the festival comes around. Now, you have to go to the Welcome Center to use them. They won't be deployed to the festival site, but they'll be there all day long, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. Additionally, there's exhibits that talk about various aspects of Indian Wells Valley and what goes on there. Is it there?
There is, yes.
And I know that one of the things that they showcase there, they use this area, this gorgeous area, for the backdrop of major motion pictures and also commercials and, you know, MTV-like music videos and all kinds of different things, don't they?
Yes, they do. And that's one of the things that Ridgecrest is known for. People, a lot of production companies use Ridgecrest as a backdrop and the surrounding areas like the Indio Kern Airport, the Trona Pinnacles for their movie scenes, music videos, commercials.
And the gorgeous landscapes of Death Valley.
Yep.
Death Valley or Indian Wells Valley or going up the eastern skirt of the Sierra Nevadas. You've got Bishop and you've got the Alabama Hills and all of that. And this eastern skirt of the Sierras, one of the more remarkable places on Earth, I think, for the diversity of vegetation, the amount of cultures that are there, the sky, the landscape. It's endlessly engaging as I talk about it. And so it's a good...
It is.
I think it's a good setting for the Petroglyph Festival. And why don't you give us some of the details as to when the festival is going to be and where it's going to be located?
The festival is going to be on the 5th and 6th of November. It's Saturday and Sunday.
That's the first weekend in November, isn't it?
That is the first weekend in November. And mark your calendars because it's always the first weekend in November.
Exactly where in Ridgecrest is it going to be?
Sure. In Ridgecrest, Las Flores Avenue, between the Matarengo Museum and Leroy Jackson Park. In Las Flores Avenue, you can get right off of China Lake Boulevard and head east. You'll see the signs. You'll see all the action happening. It's 10 to 6 on Saturday the 5th and 10 to 4 on Sunday the 6th.
Is there anything happening in the evenings?
No, the festival will go until 6 and it'll be over on Saturday at 6 p.m. There's nothing else in the evenings.
Okay. And what can one do at the festival?
So this year, the biggest draw we hope is going to be the powwow, which we're trying to incorporate into the festival. We're not promoting them as two separate events. The powwow is organized by Pete Whitehorse. The festival is produced by the festival committee. And so there are going to be food vendors. There'll be retail vendors. There's going to be a stage where we're going to have all Native American performers throughout the day. And the main group on the stage for Saturday is going to be the Blue Mountain Tribe. They're from Tehachapi, and they're a blues rock band who play original tunes, and all four members are Native Americans, and they have a big following, so we hope to attract their followers to Ridgecrest for their performance. And that's the Blue Mountain Tribe from Tehachapi.
Fantastic. Are they local to the Tehachapi area, or do they come from other particular ethnic groups? Do you know?
So the different groups that they're from, there's a Chiricahua, Apache, Yokuts, and Cherokee in that group.
So it does have a diverse assemblage of ethnic groups that represented with that particular music group, doesn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
Well, we've used up most of our third segment. Is there any sort of segue or message that should be a key takeaway from your time together with us, Professor Zubia?
The key takeaway is to understand what the Petroglyph Education Foundation is and why we put the festival on and why we celebrate the Native American heritage here in Ridgecrest during the festival. So it's important to know that we understand the sensitivities. We know what our mission is, what our goal is, and that is to continue the outreach with the local Native Americans and throughout that want to participate in this festival.
Well, that's wonderful. I think that's eminently defensible and valuable, and especially in this time of contrast, to bring people together in a loving and positive interaction is a huge blessing. My hat's off to you, Matthew.
Thank you.
God bless, and see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
This is Chris Webster, founder of the APN and one of the chief editors. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. If you want to keep the conversation going and support us along the way, go to arcpodnet.com/members. That's arcpodnet.com/members. And thanks for listening.